and that would keep the sanctity of the moment despite the jovial atmosphere of the festival. Now, one of the major issues that the Rishon that we have to discuss here is what was the purpose of the institution? Was the institution of this balcony in the Beit HaMikdash, the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, okay, which obviously changed this, required a change in the structure of the Beit HaMikdash, despite the fact that the dimensions of the Beit HaMikdash, the structure of the Beit HaMikdash was, it came from the Nevi'im. So essentially they were divine. Nevertheless, because of this need to maintain the decorum, the sanctity, to prevent kalut rosh, lightheadedness, levity, in the Beit HaMikdash, despite the festive atmosphere, they had to put hooks in the wall, put up planks, they had to change, then there was a structural change. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his analysis, in his tshuva, lengthy tshuva, which we read a substantial part, what I have here says only about half the tshuva, and we only read about half of that. Rav Moshe Feinstein makes it very clear that from his perspective, two points. First of all, he says, if they had to make a change in the structure, that's what was required, that means that they must have been Torah driven. Simply, because after all, if the divine rule was to make the Beit HaMikdash this way, to change the Mikdash to Beit HaMikdash must have been divine driven. It must have been that it was almost like a tenai, it was a condition of the building that if the situation should change, it was obvious that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted you to change it. Because otherwise, how could they change the structure? They have to override a divine will. So that must be understood that if a situation should arise in the future where it's necessary, if it's necessary to change the structure to maintain some previous divine principle, that obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have agreed to. It didn't follow. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, from here you see that the building of this mechitza, of this balcony, to maintain must be divine, must be considered do'oraita. Now, we'll see in a moment Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests an alternative interpretation, but several possible variations you'll see in a second. But that's his fundamental, at least certainly in the Beit HaMikdash, where the story occurred, for him, the balcony was divine. Now, it's true, they tried other things, okay? They didn't build the balcony first. But it meant all along that there was a principle, which was maintain the Kedushat HaMakom, maintain the sanctity, maintain non-levity situation. We want happiness, we don't want levity, we don't want kalut rosh, which is sort of a loss of control. We want happiness, but not loss of control. And modern terminology in the literature we call simcha versus holut. Holut, Kohelet uses the word holut. It's almost like a silliness. Okay, it's a silly happiness. Okay, now that's a very fundamental principle, because you'll see in a second the fact that the emotion function holds that the building of the mechitza was divine means it has a certain strictness to it, okay, that may present a problem. And you'll see from the other perspectives, from the other views, you'll see why this is not so simple. What? His argument is a good one. So I'm trying to explain his position. It's not that the mechitza per se is divine. When they tried several solutions to what is the divine, what's the divine requirement that there should not be kalut rosh? They tried simple separation. They saw it didn't work. As long as there was a pas So therefore, the solution to the problem was mechitza. That mechitza worked. The mechitza must have been the solution Kadosh Baruch Hu had in mind when he said maintain, prevent kalut rosh, because all the other solutions didn't. It's there is a problematics to it, but it's man, look, you have to do certain things. You try different solutions to try to get the goal, and you see the others don't work. They felt that that was the, they didn't want to charge change, because they didn't want to have to change the structure.
No.
So they tried some solution. Well, then they saw that the only solution would be to somehow change the structure by building a balcony, but they went ahead and built the balcony. They didn't try it right away. But at least that's what Moshe's in the understanding of the analysis. Now, what was the principle? The principle they saw that when there are masses of men and women, you have to be separate. They found some source in the prophets, in Zechariah, that they all come to mourn and mourn the Mashiach in the days ahead, the Mashiach ben Yosef, I don't want to go into that, but the major leader and the men and women are there, and it says the men were separate and the women were separate. So you see that there's a need to maintain a separation between the sexes, and if what's needed to do that is a mechitza, that's what you have to put in. Now, Rav Moshe asks, what is it that caused the levity? What is it the mechitza is trying to prevent? Says Rav Moshe, it must have been the possibility that the men and women could come easily talk to each other and easily touch each other. That's the pivot of his principle. And since the mechitza's purpose is to bring physical contact, okay, then says Rav Moshe, this separation that I need, he says we can have a balcony. Fine, you have a balcony, that's one. But most shuls, a lot of shuls can't build balconies. So I have it on the ground floor. How high does the mechitza have to be? That which prevents easy physical contact and easy physical contact. What is it? Says Rav Moshe, a mechitza that comes over here. Because once if the mechitza is down here, you can just reach over the mechitza because it's all the problem. It has to come up here. It has to come up to the shoulder height, which makes it very difficult because you have to stop. You have to go off. Right? And he says, then the average person up here. Now what's bothering Moshe? What's bothering Rav Moshe is that the mechitza, simple separation of a space into two rooms, two areas, is never that high. Halacha, when it wants to set up partitions, either for Shabbos or for Sukkah, or other examples which Halacha talks about is dividing a room where you have Svarim and you want to have, the couple wants to have sexual relations, and they have to divide the area, so it's a considered a different area. Rules about a Sefer Torah, all sorts of rules where you want to set up a barrier to say, this is one room, this is another room. How tall does that mechitza have to be? 10 fachim. 10 fachim is approximately 3 feet. So Rav Moshe in his back of mind, and you're now going to, today we're going to see some response, the Rav Moshe response to. So normally if I said you need a mechitza, halacha would say 10 fachim, 3 feet. Why does Rav Moshe require a mechitza up here? He says because 3 feet doesn't solve the problem. What was the problem, according to my analysis? According to my analysis, the problem was the physical contact. It was up to my hips. That doesn't solve any problem. I can still talk easily. I can still reach over easily. What is that problem? What does it solve the problem? So therefore, it says, this mechitza must be different than every other mechitza, and it's got to be up to the shoulders, 18 tefachim. Now, I want you to make it very clear to you that Rav Moshe's analysis is convincing, but it's based on zip. Rav Moshe is merely using a logic, an analysis, right? The Gemara doesn't say anything. The Gemara talks about a balcony. One could well argue that the only thing that could have worked in the Beit HaMikdash was a balcony. You could argue that. Now, let me just mention, but most folks don't say that. Most of us would say no, because we know that most of the shuls don't have balconies. You know, the shuls for thousands of years were on the many of the kelim down for their mechitzas. Now, so you have to take into account the reality of Jewish history. But the fact of the matter is, for most poskim, this is there are dissenting opinions. We'll see some of them. But for most poskim, agree with the Moshe's analysis. That was the problem. The problem was the physical contact, and therefore, that's the mechitza has to be up to 18. Asks Rav Moshe, hinting to a dissenting opinion, which we'll see eventually too. maybe the purpose of the mepita is to prevent visual. The men shouldn't see the woman. That's why they built the balcony. So the woman would be on top and the men would be on the bottom. Says Rav Moshe, that can't be. That can't be, because if the problem is visual, if the purpose of the problem of the levity was because the men could see the women, then the whole process doesn't make sense. Because after all, if you, the men, we'll see this in a second, the men were sitting on the ground floor, the woman on top, all around. What makes you think that the men over here couldn't see the women? Besides, what makes the men, even if you say the men were under the balcony and couldn't see, because the balcony blocked them, or however you want to set it up, but what about the men in the middle who could see the women? The men dancing, see the women. So he wants to argue, despite the fact that the Rambam in one place says that the men should, that the that one place, the Rambam suggests that the men should see the women. Every place the way the Rambam says the men should be separated from the women. One place the Rambam says the men shouldn't see the women, he says, nevertheless, that Rambam is in his commentary to the Mishnah, Rambam every place else in his code, law code, says separation, and separation means there shouldn't be physical contact, as I argue. Okay, yes?
Usually when any of these topics are developed, between the Gemara and the Rambam, they've been like 800 more years of stuff happening. Before we get, nobody wrote about it, or
Excellent.
Much did they
want to
deal with
it? One of the major arguments of the conservative movement, when they attempted to say, to take out a mechitza, they says, but mechitza is not mentioned anywhere in the codes. And the Rambam, the Rambam talks about what they did in the Beit HaMikdash. But nowhere in the codes, when it discusses a shul, does it say, but you have to build a shul with a mechitza. That neither Rambam, nor the Tur, nor the Shulchan Aruch, nobody says it. Now, there have been several responses to that. One response is that it was obvious. Everybody knows what a shul looks like. Every shul, Karaites, it's the Karaim had it, the Shomronim had it. Every shul that we have and we've uncovered had a mechitza. Second of all, there were a lot of shuls that we knew that did not have mechitzas. Temani shuls, yeah. Hundreds of Temani shuls, no mechitzas. That's because no women come. So the women didn't come. There's no, women are chayav in tefillah with tzibur. If I built a lushtimo, I didn't build a mechitza. So that was number two. I mean, so that the question is there, but everybody says, look, that's what Jewish tradition. It was obvious to everybody, no, but it didn't have to be written. But as you'll see, let me just mention that it might say that it's not a law but a custom, and we'll have to talk about this. Okay? This, we'll have to talk about the status of what the status of mechitza, because I really, until now, this whole conversation has been what? Talking about the Beit HaMikdash. I haven't yet done anything that talks about transition from Beit HaMikdash to Shul. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein already hints to this. Rav Moshe Feinstein is going to say, or is going to argue, that this is not a Beit HaMikdash issue. This is masses of men and masses of women getting together. That's the issue. How do I know, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, that that's the issue? From the Hesped. From the fact that the morning of the Mashiach ben Yosef, right? It says the men were separate, the women were separate. So it says they were separate, they were kept separate. So therefore, since the Beit HaMikdash required a mechitza, therefore, it says that's the issue that's involved. By the way, I want to bring to your attention that I keep waffling, and sometimes nobody said, all right, but you're not being fair. Because what does the Hesped say? The men were separate and the women were separate, right? Does it say they built the mechitza? How do we know, the Gemara says, how do we know that we have to keep the men and women separated from there? And then it says, so therefore they put a mechitza in the Beit HaMikdash. It doesn't follow, necessarily. You keep the men unseparated, the women separated, and the Beit HaMikdash, they built a mechitza, but every place else you don't need a mechitza.
Maybe outside you don't need a mechitza.
Maybe outside you don't need a mechitza. That's a good point. I mean, the Moshe's analysis is not complete. There's that step that's missing. But Moshe consciously does just what I did until this last second. He says, you see, the Gemara says you got to keep them separate. And you see that they put a Be'er Mechitz because of it. They put a Mechitz in the Be'er Mechitz. Show that your masses of women matter together, you got to put a Mechitz up. But you can already feel that other poskim could argue. Oh, maybe in a building you need a Mechitza, but outside you don't need a Mechitza. Maybe with festivities you need a Mechitza, but sadness you just need separation. I mean, I can make all sorts of distinctions, and these distinctions are made. And we will see them as we go through. But I just want you to get to this. Ramoshi, since he is one of the major positions which everybody reacts to, you have to see what his position is, and then we'll see. Let's now go back. Yes.
There
were women there and the men there, and they're sitting separate.
What?
So then there is a
separate.
There's an aisle.
There's an aisle. I agree, there's an aisle. Yes, most definitely, there is an aisle. Most definitely, there's an aisle. Yes, an aisle could be four, five, a large aisle, could be a large separation. It's still not a chitza. Rav Moshe seems to say, from his understanding of what the Gemara did from Hesped to the Beit HaMikdash, that the separation must be enforced by a mechitza. It's simple said, because after all, he said they tried the separation. They're putting the men on the women on the inside, and the men on the gender reverse, and it didn't work. So they put it. But you look from the Hesped story, it doesn't say anything about mechitza. It doesn't say anything about mechitza. And you'll see where Rav Soloveitchik learns that there are a lot of other ways of learning this whole sugya, and I just want you to feel that it's not so chalak. I mean, it's a very good analysis, very interesting, but there are some weak pieces here that might allow for a lot of good variation. Okay, a lot of consistent variation, which may explain some of the interesting customs that occur in practice. Okay, so yes.
It was
obvious because in practice they knew what was done. Like, let me just, there was an article that came out about 2-3 years ago in Tradition, written by Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. This is must read. It's enormous. Maybe someday I'll just photocopy 50 copies and just give it out to you. And this is for your general knowledge of how Judaism works and what occurred in the Holocaust that changed the way Judaism works. I may have mentioned last year, but I'll say I'm as late. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik points out that throughout Jewish history, the general tradition was called mimetic tradition, a mimetic copy. I did it because my father did it, because my grandfather did it. And if I had any questions, I went to the Rav in the Shtat. I went to the rabbi in the city, and he had the tradition of the community way back for hundreds and hundreds of years. And generation after generation kept what their forefathers and forefathers did. There was minaka here, minaka makom. These things were very sacred. There were certain times that things changed. One of the major changes was when Chaim Volozhin set up the yeshivas, these people gave them all sorts of cities, he essentially took them out of their cities and said, from now on you do mine, and your minute. Now you do mine, the yeshiva has a minute. And it sort of became like a super institution, but that was still exceptional. But it became a model for what happened around the World War period, where there was a tremendous, at the end of the 1800s, the tremendous upheavals going on in the Jewish community. And this major upheaval was that there was no continuity. Jews were moving from community to community. Their ancestors would be destroyed, al-Hat Kama Bakama, after World War II. But even World War I, and where the people were moving to places and tremendous upheavals, tremendous migrations. And people no longer relied on what their parents did. They didn't always know what their parents did. I see my father-in-law, he left his parents' home when he was 14. And on Seder night, he tries to reconstruct what his father did, because he doesn't remember. I mean, the only thing, he ran away from Warsaw when he was 14 years old. So he doesn't really remember. And the time to, what happened? The Jewish community moved from a tradition of what did my forefathers do for a generation to what does the book say? Because the books were still around, and then you start following the book. And it's not a mimetic tradition where I follow my parents' custom, but I follow what the books say. The word becomes in the codes, in the books, in the Mishnah Berurah. Now, people don't say, I do what my father did. I say, I do what the Mishnah Berurah says. It's a book that has the authority, not my parents' tradition. Now, even today, there's still a struggle over that. And many, many, Menashe Klein, for instance, in the major battle over whether to have an Erev in Brooklyn or not an Erev in Brooklyn, Menashe Klein, they attacked, and Rav Moshe said, you can't make an Erev for his reason. And Menashe Klein says, what do you mean? For thousands of years, Jews have been making Erev. What is Rav Moshe coming on from? I can't make an Erev under these conditions. There are too many people, of this and that. He says, he's following a mimetic tradition. In any case, I'm getting off on a tangent. I think you have to understand that people knew what to do. If you ask me, why didn't they say you need a Nezer Snush? Everybody knew you needed a Nezer Snush, right? Do I have to say that you need a lot of things in shuls that you don't, they didn't have to say because everybody knew. In the Middle East, everybody knew that shuls are built this way. And the Aron Kodesh, and everybody in the knew how the shul looked. Nowhere does it say how what the structure of the shul, how the shul seats are placed, whether it's round or straight or angled or this. You don't discuss it. Everybody knew what it looked like. Yeah.
What if?
By the way, it doesn't say anywhere in the shul that you need an Ner Tamid, yet every Jew, every shul for the last 2,000 years has an Ner Tamid. There are a lot of things that only became problematic when we moved with the emancipation. People began challenging. And wanted to change that people had to search now for sources. Yes,
what if one were to say that the reason that for all those generations there was separations in the shul was because people in general in public kept themselves separated, and therefore it also applied to shuls, but not because of any halakhic reason.
Okay,
and therefore you might say, well, today people go to lectures, they sit together.
We have to justify that. If you're right, then we have to justify in the shul, and I hope to talk about that, because that's not a trivial issue. I mean, why is it that in this community, ever since it was settled, men and women sat together, and in many communities, it's not trivial. If what you say is true, and it is true, that men and women always sat separately, why the chutzpah do we have to sit together? And rabbis accept it, and nobody says, boo, what's the rationale to it? That's the ultimate. And after we finish Mechitza, we'll talk about mixed society, right? And we have to talk that issue because that's the natural question that leads from it. But your point is right.
But I'm just saying.
No, but what you're arguing.
The relevant shita enters into this.
Oh, no question. No question that I've been working up to a whole view of tzniut in every aspect. But I have to look. But I can't. Look, I can't give you a boy, and I hope you trust me more than I don't simply give you a boy. What's a boy? Svarot kresiot, the svar that comes from your stomach. I want to give you a svar that comes from poskim. I want to discuss poskim, okay? Now, on this issue of sitting together in a mixed society that modern orthodoxy talks about has to be based on a mucker. If it's stam, keeping the dash, you know, since everybody does it, so we do it, but we really know what's us. That's not the way it is. It's based on very good mitzvot, but you have to let me go through the material, and then you'll see. But essentially what you're saying and arguing, let me just say now, very come back to your position. Essentially, what you're saying is that mechitzah is a minute. They always said separately, mechitzah is a minute. And minhag has validity in Jewish law. You're not challenging the need for mechitzah, but you're saying, how do you understand Gemara Sukkah? Now, let me just point out since we're going very far afield, let's try to make Seder. That's why I want to start with the Moshe Feinstein Shita. Let's understand his Shita. And then we'll start saying, once we get that Shita straight in our head, with qualms, with questions, then we'll start seeing possible variations. In fact, we'll see in a minute if you ever let me get me. You see, we will see that emotion self raises other possibilities of analysis. Now, let me make it clear. Moshe states that the principle of Mechitza is a general principle. It has nothing to do with Beit HaMikdash. There's one could argue. It has nothing to do with Shul. One could argue it's only in Shul. He holds it's a general principle because he keeps referring, because you saw an Hesped. And any place that will not need a Mechitza, like for instance, men and women sitting together eating a dinner together. They need a mechitza or not need a mechitza. Until what Ramosha, if Ramosha says the general principle, you need a mechitza when men and women sit together. And simple separation is not enough. You need a mechitza. Or two different rooms. You'll see Ramosha does not hold that. And he proves that it can't be. But you have to, let's go through the knowledge. Okay, come on. We're now on. Okay, I would suggest the best way to find it is to find source 11 and go back one page. Find source 11 and you go back one page. Okay? I'm on the flip side of 11. Before 11. Find 11 and go back. And when you go back, look, we're in the third paragraph, Vidine. Okay, we're on now the paragraph that says Vidine. And this is where Ramosha now is going to suggest a variation on the thing, Vidine. In the previous paragraph, Ramosha says it has to be 18 fachim up to the shoulders. Because that's what's going to prevent, 10 fachim is not enough, up to the shoulders. Now he says, vihine. This is the third paragraph. Vihine. Yesh makom lomar, shirak b'mikdash haya asur midoraita. One could argue that only in the Beit HaMikdash was it forbidden to be without a mechitza? Why? That only in the Beit HaMikdash was a mechitza required. Mishum din yirah de umikdashi tiro. The pasuk says that you have to mikdashi tiro. You have to have fear in my mikdash. So maybe one could argue that this whole contortion that's going on in the Gemara Sukkah was because it occurred in the Beit HaMikdash. Because if you're in a Leviticus situation, you're not fulfilling. That's what's driving the Gemara. Vim came the Beit HaKnesset hu rak midrabanan she'asru gam behem kalut rosh. Because now let me explain to you what he's saying, because he's not explicit. We mentioned already that a shul is called by the Gemara in several of the midrashim. And these are midrashim that have halachic application. It's not stam in the Veltarine. It's not garita. These are, the Gemara applies it to several halachot. The Beit HaKnesset is called Mikdash Ma'at. Our temple has been destroyed. All we have left is the Batei Knesiot, the Batei Midrashot, which is the Mikdash Ma'at, the Mikdash in miniature. And then too, says the Gemara, there's an Isur Midrabanan of et Mikdashi Tirao. Rabbinic. Now, there are fundamental differences between things that are Doraita and Rabbanan having to do with the strictness. Let me give you a quick example so you'll understand. Ramosha says you need 18 tefachim. Okay? You know, there's big machloket about how big a tefach is. Okay? What is your average, what's your average four fingers? Is it 3.2 inches? Is it 3.5 inches? Is it 3.8 inches? Now, if you're going Doraita, you go Lechumra. you know, the famous thing by the coast, you know, you go to Chazon Ish Shita, they go to the Rav Chaim Noah Shita, you know, the Kula and the Chumra, and it makes a difference in the right to the Rav. If Mechitza's the right, I have to go to Chumra. Or I should go to Chumra. If it's only Drabana, then I can take the more lenient position, I can go to Kula. And it can be, and if you look at the Shiurim and Mechitza of 18th Vachim, if you're told that a Tefach, like Rav Chaim Noah, is 3.2 inches, then 18 fachim, which is the way Rashi, comes to be 56.7 inches, which is less than 5 feet, right? What is 5 feet is 60 inches, okay? 60 inches. So if you use the smaller tefach, it's even less than 60 inches. But if I go l'chumra, like the Chazon Ish, then it comes 3.66 inches, almost 3.7 inches. It's on the difference between sheet is about a half an inch. And you multiply 18, because all these little pieces get. So it comes at least 66 inches, which is five and a half feet.
Yeah, but the whole thing isn't based on number of tefachim that are sheared that we got. The whole thing is based on a logical deduction.
I told you 1,000 times you think too fast. You're 100% correct. And Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe's analysis was based on tefachim. He says it's Doraita. He says up to here is 18 tefachim. Remember, I told you he didn't go around measuring people. I always found that very fascinating. He says no, the average person of the shoulder is 18 tefachim, and then he says now how big is 18 tefachim? Now, Rav Moshe in several tshuvot, which I will show you, begins backtracking because when he starts measuring the average woman, he sees that up to the shoulders is less than 5.5 feet. A lot of women with their heads are 5.5 feet. Right? So he's in the backup. We'll see inside. In fact, Rav Moshe, while in several places keeps saying 18 vachim, and then in an English translation of the tshuva, he actually writes 5.5 feet. In several of the tshuvot, he goes down to 60 inches, which is 5 feet. And in one tshuva, he says maybe it's even 58 inches. Okay? So he's aware of the issue that you raised that. You know, you need a reality check here. But at least you can understand he's certainly not willing to go down to 5.5 feet, to 57 inches, right? Which is a little bit 4.75 feet, under 5 feet. He's not willing to do that. He himself, because he's holds to right to.
It's cheaper by the woman, shouldn't it?
Goes by the average woman. Mm-hmm. I got bad news, so the average woman's getting taller. Need a reality check back too. I mean, that's true. The average woman getting taller. Look at her. But
she's not
average. Right? Right. Of course, she's a middle one. But the fact of the matter is that when Rav Moshe wrote the tshuva was 1950s, the average woman was up to the shoulders was about 60 inches, was about 5 feet, and now they're tall. The average woman is definitely more athletic, and she from a younger age, and they are taller. They also drink a lot more milk. But the fact of the matter, okay, let's go back to the point. Okay, we're going to start from that being that paragraph again. V'hine yesh makom lomar shirak b'mikdash hayasu midoraita mishum din yirad v'mikdashi tirao. That only biblically did you have to worry about having machitza and you had to do it. All these things only because of the mikdash yitiro. Shimu b'kalut mosh, ain't it be yirad, because if there's levitus, you're not fearing God. Okay, we're now 5 words into that second sentence. Ve'im kein, b'beit ha-knesset, hu rak mid-rabbanan, in a shul, it would only be d-rabbanan, she'asru gam b'kalut mosh. Now he's saying, you'll still need a machitza, right? Why? Because the model was what? The Beit HaMikdash. That's the right of Mechitza. Now in Shul, it'll also be, a Mechitza, but it'll only be the Rabbanan in Shul. The Lo Mahani Gafnai, you can't make a condition to build the Shul to permit levity. See, there's an interesting problem. In many things, you're allowed, for instance, a major problem. You know, we have refreshments back here. That's not a trivial problem, not a trivial thing. Eating in shul is not a trivial. They use the shul every day to daven. You're not allowed to have refreshments in a shul. You're not allowed to eat in shul. Unless you build the shul al tanai. You said that shul is, we build the shul on condition to allow non-purely religious actions. So the halacha says that it's permissible, provided it's not kamush. That is, you're permitted to have, if you build it out tonight, there's a, first of all, there's a big machloket, whether in Chutz La'aretz, almost everybody agrees you can build up tonight. There's a machloket, whether in Eretz Israel, you can build up tonight, because the sanctity of Eretz Israel. Add to the sanctity of the shul, too much more.
I thought in a
basic
fresh, but you study, you can eat.
There's more, yes, because people, but people don't sit here. The question is, a basic fresh? Are people sitting here all day long? Now, I don't know. I mean, there are arguments of the shirim going regular, and people stay there all day, and therefore they eat, and stuff like that. There are all rules about smoking a shul and chewing gum in a shul. Listen, these are not trivial problems, because of the sanctity of the synagogue. In any case, when this shul was built, we built it out tonight. I know because I specifically made the tnai. Because the building committee was, I was on the building committee and I made them sensitive to this issue and it was built out tonight. But the tnai does not allow you to use it for things that are levitous. Okay? And these are not trivial problems. Okay, below mahani gab tnai. And a tnai will not work to permit levity. But you cannot have a dance back here, which is clearly levitous. I am the Megillah Daf Chav Chet, the Mishor Arachan Kuf Nun Aleph, the Fiyud, which talks about the rules, about conditions. The Kol Sheken, remember the third line? Kol Sheken, the Kalad Rosh of Yisrael. Kalad Rosh in general is a problem, right? You couldn't run a, if I was running a kindergarten back here. Can I run a kindergarten? I mean, some I would argue yes, some would argue no, because that's educational. That has a mitzvah action, but he says if it's Isur, you're definitely a tonight will work. Shame on your butt tonight. Abu Bishat Tfilah. He says, but that's in shul in general. Abu Bishat Tfilah, Kushamaskirim, Shem Shemayim, the Divrei Torah, Ukedusha, Mistaber, it would seem to me, that is, even if I would admit that a shul in general, the requirement for a machitz is only rabbinic. It would seem to me, Mr. Bear, he doesn't say he knows for sure, Mr. Bear, which nobody means, and I tell you, many disagree. Mr. Bear, that it's biblical. That when you're dominating, the Mechitza then becomes biblical again, even in the shul. Shaloha Kedusha Shetiknu B'Vet HaKnesset. Why is the shul sanctified? What gives the shul sanctity? Katav Aran B'Megillah Daf Chavav. Miran writes in the Gemara Megillah, Shumishum Shikaro Asui Lomar Bo Devarim Shekedusha, because of the prayers, the acts of sanctification, the Kaddish, the Kedusha, the Borku, that one says in Shul. V'im Divrei Kedusha Atzman Ein Ben Dinei Kedusha Lo Yeshayach LeKataken Kedusha Al Beit HaKnesset B'Shvilam. He says, they are sanctified, and they make the Shul sanctified, and therefore, ולכן משמה שבעת התפילה הרי הוא בדיני קדושה דאורייתא ויעשו לנהוג בהם קלות ראש בתפילה בדאורייתא. He says, because they are sanctified and they give the shul sanctity, therefore, the מחיצה becomes דאורייתא. This argument doesn't follow. I must tell you, it's a very weak argument. My humble opinion. Because what he's saying is that when you, the things that you say are acts of sanctification, and they have the sanctity which makes the shul sanctified. Who says that these acts of sanctification are biblically sanctified? I mean, they have sanctity. I don't deny the thing Kaddish Kedusha, but these are rabbinic institutions. Kaddish Kedusha, Baruch Hu. These are all rabbinic institutions. Now, what does the Torah say? You have to say, now, what does the Torah say that when you say that, of course you become sanctified? It's part of the service of God. But what makes that, therefore, the shul into a doraita, like a doraita institution? That's what he's arguing. He's arguing a shul, the requirement for a mechitza is a copy of the Beit HaMikdash, that's under rabbinic. But when you daven, it becomes like the Beit HaMikdash.
Well, right, that's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, there's a premise to this.
I understand it. Wasn't
the premise that when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, we went out and made shuls instead, and we don't bring korban up, and we do tefillah.
Right. But it's rabbinic. The Torah. Something becomes biblically sanctified because God said, sanctified.
Yeah, and this has become that. This becomes the sanctified.
We made it become that. The rabbis made it become that. I'm not denying that the rabbis made the right decision, but what's its authority? Its authority is rabbinic. Because I daven it, because I do acts of sanctification, therefore its sanctity becomes biblical? You know what that would mean? It would mean that you had to walk with your shoes on, you had to take off your shoes. You could not have a bathroom in the shul. Do you know what it means that the shul is sanctified like the Beit HaMikdash? There are rules you can't, there are all sorts of rules. Now, some of them we do. For instance, it's forbidden to take a shortcut. You want to get from here to there, instead of walking around the shul, one could take, would want to take a shortcut. You're not allowed to take a shortcut in the shul, just not allowed to take a shortcut in the Beit HaMikdash. You want to go to the other side from one high side of Harabai and in. Instead of walking around, say, I'll walk to the Azara. Come in, I'll walk to the Azara, go out the other. Sure, you're not allowed to do that. You have to walk all around the walls. Now that we learn from that in the shul, you learn from the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, the Gemara in Brachot said it. But there are a lot of things that we do that you wouldn't do in the Beit HaMikdash. Like have bathrooms, like walking with your shoes. In the Beit HaMikdash, you walk barefoot. All sorts of rules about things that, you know, and certain areas in Kedusha and Tuma and Tara, I mean, we don't do any of that stuff. So the argument that because I daven and do acts of sanctification, therefore it becomes sanctified biblically, I can feel his argument. I don't think that it holds up. I don't think in analysis it necessarily holds up. But he says, Mistaper. Look, he's not arguing that that's cold cut, you know, that it's clear. He's Mistaper. He thinks that it, therefore one could argue the level of sanctity goes up. Okay. Okay, go down. Can you see at the end of that paragraph, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the end. Ela Mashma. You see that? See what the end of that paragraph that we're reading. Go up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines towards the end, 5 lines from the end. Ela Mashma. Ela Mashma. Okay. Ela Mashma, shehu isur b'chol makom shetzlichim. Now this is a very important line. Let me read it again. And he's going to develop this argument because Ela Mashma, it seems to me, he says, shehu isur b'chol makom shetzlichim likaved. You know what? Let's see. Just hold on to this. I apologize. Listen, do me a favor, please. I apologize. You go up two lines above that where the period is. Avo. You see where the period is? I'm sorry. I skipped. I wanted to make sure, but I realized that I made a mistake. Avo. Muchachim tzat lomar. Everybody with me?
No.
It's, okay, from the end of the paragraph, that paragraph we're talking about, kind of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines. Go to like two-thirds of the way across, there's a period. Above.
Ah, yeah.
Okay, got it? Above. Above. Muchachim tzat lomar. And he says tzat, because it means, again, he's saying this illogical. Muchachim tzat lomar. Shedin zehu midoraita bechol makom kibbutz. That wherever men and women have to get together, he says. I hold that logically you're required to have a mechitza. Again, wherever b'chol makom kibbutz, sharei hespet shel atid shelameda misham lo matzanu bo shiyeh b'mikdash. We didn't find that hespet was in the Beit HaMikdash, right? It didn't say that mechitza. It also didn't say that it wasn't the Beit HaMikdash. It didn't say anything. Right? And in fact, I would argue, you'll see in a second, we'll discuss, we'll come back to this point a little bit later, but this is again, tzat, because he admits there's a problem. It doesn't say it wasn't a Beit HaMikdash, it doesn't say it wasn't a Beit HaMikdash. Maybe it wasn't a Beit HaMikdash.
It didn't happen yet.
What?
And it didn't happen yet.
We won't have to learn that, right. Okay. Shalmeida Misham, Shalom Matzanu Bo, Shiyeh B'Mikdash. You don't find it in the Beit HaMikdash. V'im sham lo nesa midoraita ela letzniut ba'ama. If you're going to say, why do they stand separately? Only because of tzniut ba'ama. Okay, only because of modesty, simple modesty. Ekshayach lamelev mize isu doraita lemikdash. Let me tell you what's bothering him. He said, look, the whole thing starts with this hespet, right? And this hespet, the men and women are sitting separate. Now, what are you going to argue? In the shul, now listen, what did you want to say, Lee? In the Beit HaMikdash, it's Doraita. In Shul, it's the Rabbanan, and maybe Doraita when you're davening. Now what about this Hespe? What is that? What is it going to be? It's not in Shul, and it's not time during davening. What is that? So you'd be forced to say, oh, that's Stam Tzniut Ba'alma. That's just because they wanted them, because it was a mournful situation. They want to keep the men and women separate. The fact that the even this situation, they wanted to keep the men and women sick. Now, how would the logic then be? If they, if it, even in this mournful situation, they wanted to keep the men and women separate, Allah kama v'kama, work your way back, kama the Beit HaMikdash, that you're obligated to keep it separate. But this hesped situation would be only what? Sniuta ba'alma. You understand? It's only from the fact that they were worried about it, you saw that they were worried about keeping the men and women separated, that we would then argue transfer to the Beit HaMikdash, where there's a real iser, chiyuv, chiyuv of yira. We realize that you really have to be careful. So they would say, you see, there they do it. Certainly in the Beit HaMikdash, you must do it. Okay, that's one possible analysis. And there are those who actually know that. Rav Moshe says, that doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense. He says, I'm going to make that leap from that situation. Say it's only Tznut Ba'alma, and from there change the whole structure of the Beit HaMikdash because of it. It's got to be more solid. Therefore, he says, I maintain that no, even by the Hesped, you got to enforce separation. It's not just they did it, or they will do it. They're obligated to do it. And there, and therefore we learn that every situation requires it. It seems very clear that Moshe that by the Hesped, they must have had a mechitza too. Kadesh Layavo, Lidei Kalat Rosh, they shouldn't come to lightheadedness. Ach, Ulai, now he's going to jockey again. Ach, Ulai, Ashabes, Beit Yetzniuta, the Alma, even though you can argue that by the Hesped, it was only for simple modesty. What are we learning from there? That there was a mournful situation. It was a very situation. So they didn't want the men and women coming together. Why? Not because the halacha required them, but because the decorum that's necessary implied keeping the men and women separate. They shouldn't be flirting. That they shouldn't be lead to any lepidus, distracted situations. That's what we're learning from there. And now, all right? And now from there, when it comes to the Beit HaMikdash, where there's a mitzvah of yira, where the mitzvah of you have to enforce that, not just propriety. By the Hesped, they kept them separately only for propriety. But in the Beit HaMikdash, not propriety. It's an obligation. At Mikdashi Tiro, right? Shelechen yesh lasol b'mikdash midoraita mishum mitzvah yira. And therefore, v'yira Beit HaKnesset midrabanan u'b'shat tfila doraita. I think he's going right. But the down is doraita. Again, that doesn't necessarily follow. But we have clearly, he's going to say as follows. He's again raising the possibility. And this is how his analysis could be. Beit HaMikdash is the writer. Shul, the Rabbanan, and maybe when you're davening, it becomes the writer again. Outside of Shul, any separation that you have is Tzniyuta Ba'alma. It's only simple modesty. If you propriety feel the situation requires to prevent levity, then you do it then. You keep the men and women separate. Aval, let's go back to the last line there. Aval yoter mistaber shumidoraita b'chol makom kibbutz. But he says, I hold that he says that wherever men and women must come together en masse, you have to have a mechitza. Now, the Moshe has in fact very nicely argued the counterposition for us. Okay, the counterposition which holds Beit HaMikdash is the Doraita, Shul is the Rabbanan, because it's a rabbinic copy of the Shul. Every place else, there is no obligation of Mechitza. I, Hesped, well, that was a question of propriety. That wasn't a question of Halacha. That's what's called Tzniyuta Ba'alma. They did it because the situation, the decorum called for it. But Halacha does not require it. Okay? Now, one issue that we have to discuss is, all right, let's say by the Hesped, you didn't have to have a mechitza, okay? And the only reason why they stood separate was because what? Because of decorum, not because of the halacha required. Are they allowed to be mixed? See, that's a question that, please, we have to deal with, and I still haven't completely resolved it. There's a question about Rav Moshe deals with something. When we say you don't need a mechitza, does that mean, therefore, you can mix? Or does it mean, no, you don't need a mechitza, but you got to stay separate? Okay? Now, a lot of that depends on Hesped. If he's, whether Hesped had a mechitza, didn't have a mechitza, and why were they separated? Was it because of decorum or not decorum? Rav Moshe doesn't deal with that question. But we hope to deal with it, okay? Because that's not a trivial question. Let's continue on. Next paragraph. Ubelo tzorech kibbutz, but where there is no requirement, in the last paragraph there, ubelo tzorech kibbutz, after mikdash mutar, he says, this doesn't prevent, require, that wherever you have men and women in the same area, that therefore you need a mechitza. He says, I don't mean to say you need a public, you need a mechitza in the public library, or you need a mechitza on the bus. Saying you should, right? He said, Moshe says, I didn't mean that. But look at the words. He's gonna hone it a little better as we go on in the subsequent. The lo tzorech kibbutz, where there's no requirement to gather. The people come because they want to come. You know, there's no, the simcha beit shomeva, there was a mitzvah, the simcha came in the masses. This must be Rav Moshe's analysis, but because it doesn't really deal with it. There's a mitzvah, simcha, and it says, v'samachtem lefnei Hashem Elokeichem, rejoice before God. So therefore the simcha beit shomeva, which was meant to reflect this, v'samachtem lefnei Hashem Elokeichem, men and women came at mass. That was part of the tzorech kibbutz. That was part of the glory of the kings and the masses. So the masses come together. That's required. But if a man and woman come to the Beit HaMikdash, I think the kids will separate the men and the women. No, he says. But lo tzorech kibbutz, av b'mikdash mutar. Even the Beit HaMikdash is permitted to have men and women standing around. Sharei chana hitpalala samuch le'ekoi. Chana stood right by. How do we know? How do we know that she stood right by him? Because he heard that she wasn't kolala yishema. If she was 5 feet away from him, how would she know whether she was whispering or not? Says the shvatel noach the kolala yishema, but she was right next to him, and yet he couldn't hear what she was saying. Right? Shalechana kolala samuch le'ekoin u'kahad dachka v'nichnas. There's about the woman who pushed her way in into the Azara. I mean, there were a lot of men, and she pushed her way into the Azara. The Gemara Kiddushin, the Tosfot Sham, Mutarot Nashim Nikanes Bazara. The Tosfot said that women were allowed to enter the Azara gam balotach, even if she didn't push her way in. There's one Gemara, there's a machlok here between Rashi and Tosfot, whether a woman could come to the Beit HaMikdash if she didn't have business. If a woman had business, she had a korban. Or she had business, so she could come in. But if she didn't have business, just to see what's going on. She wants to see what's going on. Could she come in or not? She seems to apply, no, not. And Tosa says, yeah, woman could come in. I feel a below dach. You're not even happening. It's not relevant here at the moment. Ashen in Sham Hambeyan, Ashen, there are lots of men there. Avo b'makom shetz chimnikavitz, where their masses are required to come. According to his analysis, by the way, Rav Moshe clearly seems to hold that the Hesped must have had a mechitza. Because if I learn that the Hesped, from there, from the Beit HaMikdash, they must have had a mechitza. We finish. ולפיכר גם בבתי כנסת שלנו, שמתקבצים לפרל צריך שתהיה להם מחיצה, דף במחיצה כזו, you have to have a mechitza, and what type of mechitza? Not a 3-foot mechitza. Kazo shelo yavo mitoch lidei kalut rosh. And how do I prevent the kalut rosh? Prevent physical contact and easy talking. Shu obed zustra, with a balcony, shanashim lamala vanashim lamata, af kishin nirot sham, even if they're visual, can be seen. Obed mechitza kvo adacha ktafayim, shu yudchet tfachim, end of chuk. Okay, so that's what Moshe's analysis. And he's added, opened up a lot of other possibilities. Yes? In what? Hechav. And haker. Oh, haker. But Moshe does not deal with haker. So far, I'm plowing through. I have a large collection of responses while I'm teaching here. So I'm learning through a lot of responses. I've only seen one person who discusses Hakel, and Rav Yudar Zankin, have to remember, Hakel was not a prayer situation. It was a learning situation. The Torah clearly says, I'm a shin machine to have. Right? The Torah may have been instructing that it wanted it to be a family experience. I don't see very many posters discussing it. I'll keep studying. Just keep asking the question. Eventually, I'll hopefully get a good answer for you. Yeah, no, the Hakel is a problem. I admit Hakel is a problem, and Rav Moshe, in all his responses, does not deal with Hakel. Okay, and it's clear the men and women and children were there, all together. Okay, so I have no simple answer. I would argue that Rav Moshe may would hold, I don't know what the answer. I mean, I would enforce the position that Rav Moshe holds that they need a machitza, but Hakel goes way before the Rav Moshe. Okay. Let's turn the page. Tshuva number 11. Okay, I'm just going to digest the limits for you. This tshuva is written to Zvi Hirsch Friedman. I happen to know the gentleman. He was my father-in-law when I first met my wife, Esther, we got married. My father-in-law davened in his shul. He was a ex-Satmarite. He disagreed with the Satmar Rebbe. He was a Satmar Hasid. Disagreed with the Satmar Rebbe and the Hasidim didn't forgive him. And they gave him a rough time. Very nice lady. And when Rav Moshe came out with the response that the purpose of mechitza was to prevent physical separation and not necessarily to prevent seeing the women, he says, it's usher for men to stare at women. Certainly in shul it's usher. We have an obligation to maintain the sanctity of the synagogue and prevent the women from seeing, men from seeing the women. So Rav Moshe responds back to him, essentially what he said before. He says, you're right. It's forbidden for women, men to stare at women, leer at women, right? But that's not a shul profession. That's prohibited everywhere. And then he says, and if you look at my analysis, in the Simchat Beit HaShoeva, the men could still see the women. So the men in the middle, the men and the women could see them. Right? He says, if you want to be machmer, kavalacha. Blessing on you. Look at the last line. Last line of the source line. Abel kfot tavato harav, yodeya, shegam ma shebirati hadin, vashiur lahalacha, hayta l'shem shamayim. Despite the fact that I clearly came out against the whole Hungarian community, and against the Hasidic community, which had mechitzas from floor to ceiling almost, I clarified what the halacha required. You want to be from? But I wrote what the halacha required. Ubaruch Hashem shayam mizeh to'elet tovah. Thank God. As a result of it, came out a tremendous benefit. You have to understand, in the 1950s, we talked about this, when the conservative movement was trying to take off the shoes, and Rav Moshe said, mechitza has to be up here, it's not what the women wanted. Right? Because the women want to be able to see what was going on sitting down, too. But at least the fact that they could stand up, and you'll see other, when we have to finish that with some of Rav Moshe's leniencies here, when the woman stood up, they could see what was going on. Furthermore, if the woman were in the balcony, did they require any mechitza? No. The fact that they could be seen is irrelevant. What's the problem with physical contact? So that now we could build mechitzas with balconies with no, so the woman could see and talk, right? So therefore, it was, in many communities, just the trick. Just what was needed to maintain the tradition, the separation, and yet not have the shuls to really consider. That's what he's referring to in that particular line. Let's read number 12. Binyan mechitza. Okay, this tshuva was written to Rabbi Tibald Stern. I don't know if anybody knows, but Tibald Stern was a leading member of Agudas Israel in Kansas City. I think at a later point he went to Florida, if I'm not mistaken. Many of his rabbi in Kansas City, a prominent member. And from what Rav Moshe responds, we'll see what his position is. Pretty surprising. Mashemasik, okay, we're in the second paragraph. Mashemasik, voto vato harab b'tshuvato. This is Rav Moshe writing back to him. In your response, what you said to me. Shebezman shez renashim hi ala vitzpa. It is, you can have a balcony, but when the mechitza is on the ground, im chak, vitzpa chak, im shal hashim, sagi b'mechitza koldu. A simple, minimal halakha mechitza, which is what? Shu dalet fachim rochav, v'yud ba'orach. By the way, that's exactly the opposite. It should be dalet fachim ba'orach, v'yud. It is, the point is, 10 fachim high, 4 fachim wide, that's a minimal barrier that sets off two rooms. Okay, it's the exact opposite, not a mistake. Lo nireh klal, doesn't seem to me at all. And we know why. Because Rav Moshe says, what was the levity? The possibly detached. See, what he wanted to do, well, what people certainly say, you have the women's section, you have the men's section, that the minimal wall that separates the room into two parts is 10 fucking high, 4 fucking long, that's a wall that separates the room. That's what he said, that's all you need. So the women can be in front of it, be in back of it, but that wall divides it into two rooms. That minimal wall divides the two rooms. He says, no way. It's got to go the whole length, and it's got to be 18 fucking, because otherwise, then men and women can touch. And he says that's no different than the men and the women by the doorways, which was the problem, that they could touch each other. Okay? אלא שצריך לעשות משך כל מקום ישיבת אנשים בקיצה גבוה י' ח' תפחים ולסבי the whole length, 18 תפחים ואם אנשים אין בגובה שיעור זה אין צריך כמו נתב, they don't need that high למחיצתם מעצם דין זה אלא מדין מכה שלא יפלו they need some water so they shouldn't fall off the balcony ומה שמצא כבודו but he goes even further watch what he does ומה שכתצא כבודו לתו הרב לחדש the mishaat fila, the mishaat fila, when you're davening, adif, it's even better in shul, she'ein lachush klal lekalat rosh, you don't have to worry about kalat rosh, ve'ein kain isu muravin ze beze, you don't have to worry about mixing, ve'im kain ein tzarich lemachitza klal, Rabbi Stern wanted to argue that in shul you don't need a machitza at all when they're davening. Ve'od yotel mize, shlefi ze yuchu l'shem mamash muravin, they could say, sit actually mixed. In a chas v'shalom mamak, first of all, you should say such a thing. V'shar alei marei lechvot torot harav. This is verse number. And may the heavenly one forgive you. V'shar alei lemarei, and the heavenly one forgive you for saying such a thing. He's saying, that you did it, oh no. D'ha b'mikdash, I'll defend his position in a second, but d'ha b'mikdash, אין נכנסים שם אלא ביראה. You only go in, because in בית המקדש, you're only allowed to go in fear to the temple. ואם כן לא היו נכנסים שם אלא לצורך מצווה, you'd only go in to do a מצווה in the בית המקדש. שהוא לעשות בעצמן איזה מצווה, או לראות הכהנים, או either you wanted to do a מצווה, to be a corban, or to be impressed by the sanctity of the place, or watch the כהנים do the right, שגם כן הוא מצווה, that's also a מצווה. Look at you, Madafayim. ומכל מקום היה אסור, חזינן שאין שום כולה במה שעושים אז מצווה. What did you want to say? We'll stop here. What did you want to say? You wanted to argue that in a shul which is sanctified, you don't need a מחיצה at all. Where did Rabbi Stern get that? What's his analysis of the Beit HaMikdash? Why did they need a מחיצה?
Because they're standing around.
Because they were standing around. And watching everybody dance. Because it was a levity situation. It was a wild situation, the point that the Chazal had to worry about Kalat Rosh. Said Rabbi Stern, maybe that's only under those type of situations. You know, we have the situation where when it's Simchas Torah, you move the Mechitza aside. It's done all over the world. Who moves the Mechitza aside? According to Rabbi Stern, book forget! That's when you gotta put up the mechitza. Because that's what the Simchat Beit HaShoel was all about. What brought the levity? It was the dancing, it was the rejoicing, it was the looseness. That's what brought it up. There you need the mechitza. That's where they put up the mechitza. But in the shul, you're davening together. says, you don't need the chitzon. Maybe you need the men and women separated. Because the sanctity of the moment is enough. Now, when we talk, we're going to talk about eventually Bnei Akiva, Yeshua it was called, and the tshuva effect, beautiful tshuva, the Sri Leish. This type of argument is going to come up again. About the type of thing that you're doing, making it less problematic. Okay, just remember, that's what he's arguing. Since you're in davening, you're not going to get to Kalav Rosh. And if you're dancing, that could lead to Kalav Rosh. Okay? But if you're dancing together...
But is Kalav Rosh, I mean, Kalav Rosh is forbidden in shows. Is Kalav Rosh always a bad thing? Are there situations in which Kalav Rosh may be permitted? Places, situations?
No.
No, so Kalav Rosh is not supposed to be, you know, when it's supposed to be a show davening.
I would say...
Maybe on Yom HaTzmaut, Alan, you know, Kalav Rosh is okay.
I would argue that halakhically, yes, Kalav Rosh, let me explain something. My father, Allah Shalom, wrote a very interesting article about drugs, taking drugs. What the halakhic problem, drinking alcohol, you know, excessive amounts of alcohol. And he says the major problem is the loss of the pira chavshus. And under the influence, you've lost now your ability to make even keel decisions. Part of the problem with Kalav Rosh is it's a situation where you're out of control. Kalav Rosh, by definition, is certainly if you want to be in a sanctified, you're a sanctified mom, we don't want Kalav Rosh. Even on Purim, the poskim have a very hard time with Purim. It's something that's almost forced on them. You watch some of the contortions that the poskim do, because they're very unhappy. The idea of chayev, uninitiative, sumi adel lo yada, I try to understand it anymore, but the Gemara simply says, you got to drink till you don't know the difference between Arur Mordechai, right? Right? You don't know the difference. The person says, how can we do such a thing? You're obviously in a situation. So they say, you say it fast and you get confused, or you fell asleep. What are the person struggling with? That is the idea that I've lost, that the halacha should require me to lose my ability to make dubit your kafshas? To be able to make will halakha decisions, how do I even get to a situation? The Gemara tells a story about they were two at a party, and under the influence, one Amora killed another Amora, and then when he realized what he'd done, he prayed and resurrected him, and then he invited him to the party next year, and he said, once is enough. Right? So the post came, and you should see the contortions. You take this literally, is it figurative? Do you understand? But again, the problem, yes, halacha as a rule views Kalav Rosh as something that's wrong, improper. You should have happiness, simcha, but not holiness, not Kalav Rosh. Okay, we'll stop here. Let me just say that we'll continue with this particular tshuva to Rabbi Stern, because he now gets into, he's going to deal with in a moment, how many women require mechitza. We never asked that question, right? How many women require mechitza? You have a shul, and then this came on in shtibol, and these two women walk in. One woman or two women, do you need a machitza? And how do I understand it? We'll talk about this.
And next week is Lapa Omer.